Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guests today are both humorists and writers who don't mind getting up in front of an audience. Local writer Eric Miller will be co-hosting the 11th annual Butte Trivia Bee for Literacy in the Sierra Nevada Brewery Big Room tonight at 7 o'clock. This event supports adult reading programs and early literary services that send over 3,400 books to homes throughout Butte County. Eric Miller drops by later in the hour. My first guest believes that a sense of humor can be developed and enhanced. Jeannie Robertson is a former Miss North Carolina who went on to become an award-winning speaker. Her fellow Miss America contestants voted her Miss Congeniality. She was interviewed by CBS correspondent Morley Safer on 60 Minutes, has spoken at the White House, and released 6 humor DVDs. In her career as a humorist, 6'2" Jeannie Robertson has written 3 books: Humor, The Magic of Jeannie, Mayberry Humor Across the USA, and Don't Let the Funny Stuff Get Away. She has a 4th book coming out in the spring. Jeannie Robertson, welcome.
Hey, well, nice to talk to you, Nancy.
I would imagine that sometimes you've been called a comedian, have you, rather than a humorist?
Well, I have, but I don't call myself a comedian or a motivational speaker. I'm a humorist in my mind. Would you like for me to tell you what I think is the difference between the two?
Yes, please.
The comedian's sole goal is to get most of the audience to laugh, and they can use any avenue that they want to. They can use off-color words. They can attack certain things. They can cause the audience, some people, to get upset and so forth. Although I think if you go to see a comedian, you should expect that. And I love to go hear comedians. But the humorist wants you to laugh just as much, just as hard, really sit there and just roar. But we want to weave a little message in there, just a little bit, a little point, even if the message is to look for the humor that's around you every day. The material that I started in the convention market, now I'm in the theater world, but in the convention market, the meeting planner's job was often on the line when their people came in and the speaker left with people coming up to the meeting planner saying, "Did you not hear her? Why did you bring her in? This is how, for, you know, she gave a testimony, and we're not of that religious faith. What are you talking about?" And so I want them to go up to the meeting planner and say, "Where did you find her? I needed to hear this." So the comedian also works mainly comedy clubs, and I started 54 years ago in the convention market. And then, because when I was in my 60s, Nancy, I embraced the Internet. I'm now doing theater shows around the country where people go buy several tickets and come to hear me do an hour and a half to 2 hours. Well, so the difference is the comedian just goes for the jugular at anybody's expense. The humorist maybe weaves a longer story, and I really want people to, I don't think I could tell a joke if I had to, but I would love for people to sit at home and say, "She's been a fly on the wall. Should the same thing happen to me?"
Yeah.
And of course it didn't, but it's so similar to things that happened to all of us, that's what they think.
My guest is Jeannie Robertson, and she is a humorist who is asked to give talks conventions, you mentioned. But you know, Jeannie, you just mentioned that you want people to go up to the planner afterwards and give him compliments. And when I was in college, I happened to be home from college one time, and I was telling my parents about this really funny student.
Oh, my gosh, you're going way back.
Oh, yeah, this is way back cause when we were both in college.
Were you in Quitman, Georgia?
I was, and this is where I was, and my dad said, "Well, you know," would her humor appeal to my age group? And I said, "Oh, she would appeal to any age group." And so he said, "Well, I'm in charge of getting a speaker for our Valentine's Day Rotary Club when we invite our wives." So the day came, and you and I appeared. You know, we went to Quitman, and I could tell my dad was nervous as a cat. He barely said a word because I know what was going through his mind was, what was I thinking? I'm going to be so embarrassed in front of all my club members that I've invited this college girl to talk. And by the end, after your talk, he could not stop talking to you. He was so delighted. He just loved you. And everybody
That was in the early 60s. I cannot believe, you know, when I saw that you, I looked you up on the internet for the interview, of course, and did a little homework. And I saw that you went to Auburn at the same time. I thought, that's interesting. And, you know, and I thought, and I have been to Quitman. I said, I spoke in Quitman. I told my, I've spoken in Quitman. No, you didn't. I said, I'm telling you, I've been there a long time ago. Nancy, I am sorry. I forgot it was you. Well, now, seeing people say, where do you get your material? I can't believe it. I do. It all just came back to me. But I did start at 19. You know, I entered, I was a rising junior at Auburn. I entered a pageant. I went home one weekend. My two sisters would have both said, are you kidding us? How embarrassing. And I had never been in anything like that. There were six of us. We almost drew for it. We'd all been to high school together. But I was the oldest one, and I became Miss Graham. And I went to the Miss North Carolina and then to the, as we say in the South, as you know, the Miss America pageant. And then that I was Miss North Carolina. I did not win the title of Miss America, but that year I had to drop out of school.
I remember
that. Most of the young women now already are out and have jobs, and they take a sabbatical. But in that year, I got to make more than 500 little speeches, not 1.5 hour shows on the stage in a theater by myself. But five, and can you imagine being 19 and then I turned 20, having that kind of an opportunity? I just took it. It was like a duck to water. It took me a week to say things that were funny, and the people started laughing, and I just loved it. And so I crowned the next Miss North Carolina 12 months later, and the following week I spoke at four conventions. And the word had spread that she can cut your ribbon, but can you give her 20 minutes? You know, so I know that pageants take a lot of criticism, and in some cases I'm sure it's deserved. But in a lot, it's not, because for me, I just really grabbed that opportunity. It doesn't give you a career to be in a pageant, but it's like many things we do in our youth. It gives you the opportunity to develop some skills that you can use when you decide what you want to do.
Because a lot of people are funny, but they can't make a career on their sense of humor the way you have. And your path to being award-winning speaker is not the typical one.
No, it wasn't. All I was funny at first, but then I realized people always seemed to want me to come back, and so I had to completely change. I'm 74 now, and I've been doing this 54 years, and I'm busier now than I could possibly be. And I think if I were still telling stories about being a 6'2" contestant in the Miss America pageant, a basketball player, it would be like a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
She has this one little set of material, and she's used it and used it. But by looking for humor in everyday situations, because that's where you get your stories, and then I will say, albeit learning how to stretch a little bit and embellish and put the funny things at the end and set things up, that's all part of it. But the main thing is keeping your eyes and ears open for the things that happen. But I just kept going every decade. So now I may tell a pageant story if I think it would work in a particular situation, but I'd much rather tell about my left-brain husband or all of my friends who I maintain, although they've become semi-famous through all the DVDs and the stories, I maintain everybody's got friends like that. That we just love. We look at each other sometime and laugh. And after my speech is one thing that is, and after the theater shows now, because that's where it's led to. But people come up to me and they will say the same thing people said years ago when I started thinking, wait a minute, I'm funny, but I know a lot of people who are funny but do not have a sense of humor. You let there be a problem, and they are upset, because people would come up to me and say, Jeannie, I wish I could stand on stage and do what you're doing, but I can't tell a joke. And I thought, well, I'm not telling any jokes. And then they would say, I wish I had a sense of humor like you have, but I can't tell a joke. And that's when I realized a sense of humor is an approach toward the way we live our lives. It has very little to do with being able to entertain people. Two different things. If you can get on stage or in a party, in a dinner party, always be the one with a very funny story with perfect timing, then that's what you have, a speaking timing ability. But the real question becomes for most of your listeners, do I have a sense of humor on a daily basis? When I work, can I have a sense of humor? With my teenagers, with things that just happen in life, can I keep a sense of humor? And that can be developed, and we can teach our young people how to have a sense of humor, just like we can tell them the fork goes on the left sometime, south. So I begin to do the two. And now, at my age, people come up and say, you know what, Jeannie? I just can't believe you're just getting up there and telling stories of all these funny things that have happened to you, but we can say the same thing. And I've got family stories. I've got funny things that I can say and do. I just don't. And my point to all of those people is the same as I remind myself. We hear all the time, you can't take it with you. And they are talking about that statement really means monetary things, stuff, as they used to say, the stuff. But if we pass away and we haven't passed on our family stories, we take them with us. And I think people in my age and a little younger need to stop and think, where have I gotten these written down? Forget about your grammar having to be exactly perfect, the commas in place. Get the stories down or record the stories or get together and tell the stories. And we'll take them with us.
Well, your new book is a kind of departure, isn't it, for you, the one that you're working on now?
Yes.
Is it family stories?
It's all about, it's a collection of the stories that some people have requested. The name of the book is Don't Bungee Jump Naked and Other Important Stuff. But if people have heard and kept up with every story or read every column I've written or blah, 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 on and on and on, then there has to be new things in there. And you do know that when you record or tape or film a story, you get better, and the story gets better. The recordings and the tapes never do. So more things. When I tape, I'll actually be taping my ninth DVD in March. We're all set up to go for another hour and a half of new stories that aren't on other. When I say new stories, I mean I've worked them and gotten them ready, but they're not taped anywhere. And so when we'll be taping that and getting all those new stories out there, And I hope I'll have them ready and that the people will laugh. And I just think looking for what is around us every day is the reason I can find more stories. I will guarantee you that when I started speaking, way back in Quitman, Georgia, I guess, because I think I went to Talladega and spoke for a friend's daddy, too, that they were really looking for speakers. But I think if we go way back and keep the material fresh and you come in somewhere as a 74-year-old and you're telling stories about your husband, left brain, and all the funny things that happened to you at this age point, you can work and live in this and have a good career forever.
Well, I wanted to go back to that point you made about being able to tell jokes and be funny and having a sense of humor, because I know a lot of people that they wouldn't want to stand up and do comedy, but they have such delightful sense of humor, and they make me laugh because they have such a wonderful sense of humor. And I think that's what you want people to realize, and when you've written this book.
Well, the stories in the next book, I take them another step further. Of course, you've got to include stories they haven't heard. So a lot of the new stories will be in there. And then the characters. I have developed, by accident, but then I have realized what was happening, a cast of characters. And now when I put out a new DVD, if I were to put out a new DVD and not have a story about my bestest, quote, incorrect word, of course, bestest friend, Norma Rose, to people would say, is everything okay? Or if I didn't tell a story about Jane Tucker from New York City, who's tried to help me dress this 6'2" body, they would say, you don't work with Jane anymore? So they expect this. They've seen their faces, because when I tape the shows, everybody comes and sits in the audience, and they superimpose their name. And they're not made-up characters that you see sometimes. People just insert in an old joke and say, Bob, I see you sitting out there, and this happened to him, and it didn't really happen to him. These things really happen. So I just believe what I was going to say with the new stories and the new books, we also are taking some of the stories further and wrapping it up with what's happened since then. Because I'll tell stories about Grandma Freddie in Auburn, Alabama, and people will say, was there really a Grandma Freddie? Did these things really happen? Yeah, and you can illustrate a couple of other things that they do. So it would be a chance. The first book that I wrote were the steps to developing a sense of humor. The next book I wrote was titled Mayberry Humor Across the USA. I became so wrapped up in what I think is still the greatest television show ever produced, the Andy Griffith Show, that I thought there was a moral in every story. Plus, I just felt like it was everyday life, and studied it, typed in all the things, and I found a story everywhere in every state in the United States that I felt like tied in with an Andy Griffith episode. Yeah, I had a lot of time, Nancy, in hotel rooms to do these things. And then the third book, I developed a system on finding stories, because I'm past president of the National Speakers Association. I'm very close to professional speakers. I love the business, and a lot of people don't even realize that we exist, but of course we do. And I always say, when people have a choice, I'm tributary here, I apologize, but when people have a choice, if you're putting a meeting together, then if you're having a choice, you can have a free speaker on one end over here. You can get a politician. You can get somebody who's campaigning for a certain bond to pass in town, somebody who's getting started. And if they don't have to be that good, but they come for free, and if you've got to have a rotary speaker every week, you can get somebody from the schools. This is great. On the far other end, you have celebrities, and you pay big, big bucks for those people to come in. And their names get people excited, and the people just get so excited. They don't have to be a great speaker. They can be a John Gresham, a fantastic writer. Now, he may be a great speaker because I've never heard him speak, but he doesn't have to be. Or perhaps you get a professional athlete. But the people get excited, and they're willing for their group to pay this big fee. But in the middle, you have professional speakers. We do this for a living. If I say I'm a humorist, I darn well better be funny when I get there. And you pay, and you do get paid to come for those. So what I would like to do with you, to take you back to the book, is the next book will just continue my philosophy that I have looked and found all these stories, and I'm telling you, and I'm not a superb writer, and I'm just a person that looks at life through humorous eyes, and I listen to life with humorous ears.
Well, you do have to have a keen sense of being able to observe, because the rest of us see these things, and we don't see the humor in them, perhaps, that you do. So how do you sharpen your powers of observation?
Well, the second book was the third that I didn't tell you about, Don't Let the Funny Stuff Get Away. I developed this little system that works for me. And it's not going to work for everybody, Nancy, because they're not going to spend all the time that I do looking for humor. This is how I make my living. I'm lucky that it is also my hobby. But I have a little system that I fill out on every day that every single person I encounter is a possible source of material. Now, let me make sure that you and your listeners understand, when I first started looking for stories, I was absolutely looking for speech material. I got started at 19. I wanted to, everybody loved it when I told a few jokes the first year and memorized. I had three jokes, old jokes. But when I talked about being a 6'2" contestant in the Miss America pageant, that's the ones they wanted to talk to you about later. The true things that happened. That's what got everybody excited. So I just take my everyday, and I have a sheet of paper now, of course, in the computer, that I would fill out my day is first encounters could easily be with a cab driver. It could be with getting out of a hotel if I'm on the road, or if it's here, it could be the person who checks me in at the airline counter. And I try to initiate conversation, and I let the world write my material for me. The difference is that you just can't jot down notes. You have to go ahead and try to write it up on this sheet of paper in the old Reader's Digest paragraph form, and don't worry about perfecting it. Now, if you do this for 12 months and you're traveling, until I broke my knee, I was traveling 25 days of the month. So you, at the end of the year, I take December off. I have hundreds of little stories, and all you really need for the next year is another 15 or 20 really good stories that you can work on. But when I started looking for speech for my speech material, I remember the time exactly. I was in the Atlanta airport. All the flights were canceled because of horrible weather, and it had been that way, and it was going to be that way. And people were following flight attendants in the halls and pilots and fussing at them. And I was in my own gate area. I had pulled out a tablet. When I saw a group together and they were all traveling, I moved where they were. I eavesdropped. I'm looking for humor. And then all of a sudden it hit me. Everybody in my gate area was upset, but I wasn't. I was so busy looking for humor. And I began to realize that that's the way to have a humorous lifestyle and say, this is the way. This is a way that we approach to living. And then the steps that I think, you have to laugh at yourself. And you have to look for humor in everyday situations, which I'm doing with my little journal. And we put it in a book because my assistant of 38 years, who was at Auburn when I was and wound up here with her family, she's run my business. She came to me and said, Jeannie, everybody hears you have this secret journal system that you can find all these stories, and they want to know all about it. And I'm spending a whole lot of time telling about it. And so I said, let me just put it in a little thin little book here on how to do it and how it works for me, and give examples of how, you know, of all these stories that I've found from just being out there every day. And, of course, they're not going to do it because I do it at single every day. But some people have said it really helped them. But the catch was everybody began to say, you can go to Toastmasters clubs, and you can go to all the National Speakers Association chapters, and you can explain this system. And I said, you missed the boat. I wrote it so I don't ever have to explain it again. Here it is. You know, if you can find it, if it really works, we'll all have more material than we will ever need. And another step, for example, is to influence others to develop a sense of humor, because when we make it a priority that to influence the people around us to have a sense of humor, we just really are working on our own sense of humor. Let me give you an example. We get very caught up with young children when we come home from school. I mean, they come home from school, and, of course, the questions are, did you turn in that spelling? You know, did you turn in that project? Did you have a pop test? What did you learn today? Are we going to do homework? Well, why not ask the question, tell me something funny that happened in school today? Then when it happens, now a young child's humor is different, and you have a lot of bad stuff. But when the banner peels off the wall, your child is then thinking, wait till I get home and tell this. And take the same thing from a teacher. I taught 9 years while I spoke on the side, and then realized something had to give. But a teacher, if something, say the banner falls off or the audio machine goes out or the computer goes completely kabunk and everything, the teacher's reaction is a teaching example right there. Because if the teacher gets upset, and if the students start to laugh and the teacher gives a look that means don't laugh in this class, they stifle it, but they're still going to laugh. What if the teacher says, well, if that is not the funniest thing, you would think, how much tape is it going to take us to get this thing to stay on the wall? Who thinks they can get this thing? Do you see? We are, by influence, we are taking our children and saying that a sense of humor. And incidentally, I'm not a graduation speaker much, but once in a while I I'm on the trustees of a university, Elon University. So once in a while, you got a speech graduation. And if I did a little research. I don't have the information in front of me. I'm not a researcher. But when the Fortune 500 CEOs were asked about what they want in a new hire, sense of humor rose to the top.
My guest is Jeannie Robertson, and she is telling us how we can cultivate a sense of humor. In fact, a friend once asked me a question, and I laughed, and he replied, good answer. All I had done was laugh, but he liked my answer to his question because I laughed. And I would think that also a source of humor is the fact that you are 6'2". And your husband is even taller than that. But I don't know if you remember this, Jeannie. You said you played basketball, and you and I were teammates. Do you remember?
Sort of. Tell me, did I do well? Did you guard me?
Well, no. We were on the same team. And the intramural director put together a team, and we went to play another college because in those days.
No, I can tell you what we did. We went over and played Troy.
Yeah, Troy State University.
And do you remember, Nancy, that they thought they were going to beat us? And our coach had to go to a meeting, but we went on in cars, and we had to put over our physical education uniforms, we had to put a piece of tape because it was before Title IX. We could not do that. And I shouldn't have told the college, but here's what happened. We beat them. They were tough, and we beat them, and they were so angry and so upset. And they had two of the referees that we went in the dressing room to change clothes, and they sent someone in and said, we want to play you again this afternoon. So about that time, our coach, the physical education instructor, came in. And she said, well, what do y'all want to do? And they said, well, we beat them the first time, and it was with their refs. And she was a qualified referee, and she said, well, let's play it again, but I'll ref. And, of course, she had our international law and all those kind of things, and we beat them worse. Do you remember playing them twice in one day? It was wonderful. I just loved it. But we didn't get to play. I had someone call me from the NCAA, a young person, one time, and they were to call and find out my fees, and did I speak to on, and the person said, did you go to college on a basketball scholarship? And I said, have you ever heard of Title IX?
Yeah.
I said, no, I didn't go. What was your major, Nancy?
Actually, French
biology?
And biology and French. I had a double major in French and biology. But it just showed that other team had no sense of humor, Jeannie.
No, they did not. They were very upset. Very upset. They came in on motorcycles, some of them, and we scared us to death. We had never seen that. And they were very good. But we had our act together, and I loved beating them twice.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'll ask Jeannie about her DVDs and her presence on the Internet. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. Later in this half hour, local humorist Eric Miller has a story for us. Eric will be co-hosting the 11th annual Butte Trivia Bee for Literacy in the Sierra Nevada Brewery Big Room. That's tonight at 7 o'clock. Doors open at 6. This event supports adult reading programs and early literary services that send over 3,400 books to homes throughout Butte County. Before the break, I was talking to humorist Jeannie Robertson. whose business card used to say a tall speaker with a tall sense of humor.
Yes.
Jeannie, welcome back. Does your business card still say that?
It does if I'm speaking at a convention. I have used that because I am a speaker when I do the corporate world and the conventions. But when I do theater shows, we don't use the word speaker. We say a tall humorist with a tall sense of humor, perhaps. We have gone in different directions. This has been a 54-year career. So I think I laughingly remembered that in the early days, I actually used Horace, a tall gal with a tall sense of humor. And so it was, times have definitely changed. That didn't last long.
Well, you mentioned speaking at conventions, and Eric tonight is going to be co-hosting this event in what is called the Big Room. And when you speak, how big are your rooms?
Depends on the group. I've spoken up to groups of 20,000.
20,000.
And I have also spoken last Friday night. I was on the Grand Ole Opry, and they have sold out that night. It was 4,000. And usually conventions go between 500 and 1,000 if they are a state or regional convention. But if they're a national convention, you can have 4,000 to 5,000.
Well,
I love it. You have to, as we tell the younger speakers, now when they're laughing, don't step on your own line. You know, it's got to get to the back of that big room. And you do have to slow down as a speaker with the bigger the crowd. Now, for a Southerner to slow down, you're thinking, holy cow, she'll come to a dead stop. But those are the little tricks of the trade that you learn in 54 years of making a complete living of speaking to groups.
Well, we mentioned that you're a tall speaker. 6'2 is tall, but you're not the tallest person in your family.
No, our son, Beaver, is 6'8" tall. My husband, Left Brain, is 6'6", and I am 6'2". Now, Left Brain and I are both shrinking a little bit. But it's okay because my friends are shrinking. I'm still the tallest in the crowd.
Well, with height like that, I'm sure that basketball coaches wanted to snag your husband to play basketball for them.
Well, he was actually the captain of the Duke University basketball team, and he got his way paid to Duke for 4 years and graduated in that 4 years exactly when he was supposed to. I said one time, I thought all you basketball players took a little extra. He said, we had it paid out for 4 years, and my folks, I needed to finish right off time. A lot of them do. They just don't get the publicity.
Well, you actually finished a year later than when you started, but that's because you took off a year to be Miss North Carolina.
I did. I was a student at Auburn University in Alabama, and I was a rising junior. I loved Auburn, very active in campus politics and that kind of thing. And I went home to enter the Miss Graham pageant. There were six of us. We almost just drew for it. But I do not know why, to my sister's horror, I entered a beauty pageant. I had never been in one before. And at 6'2", and I played a little ukulele, that was going to be my talent. It was just pitiful. But I won, and that sent me to the Miss North Carolina pageant. And you couldn't buy gowns at that time for someone my height. The ladies in our town chipped in and helped Mother get all the clothes ready, and I won. I went to the Miss America pageant, as we say in the South, Miss America pageant. And I had a wonderful experience. I did not place. I did not get in the top 10, but I was Miss Congeniality. But the main thing is that the young woman pageants were so big that year. It incidentally, so many things changed that year. It was the year Kennedy got shot during my year. And it was just in Vietnam. It was an interesting time. The pageants are especially big in the South, and whoever wins the title of Miss North Carolina and the other southern states and many of the other states also, but not all of them, but she goes on a speaking tour for a year. And it took me about a week to figure out that if I said something funny, they laughed. I asked my daddy, I said, my first speech, I went on a Saturday night, my first speech was going to be in Fayetteville, North Carolina on Tuesday. And I said, what am I supposed to say? And he said, well, you got to get them to laugh. This might work. we always go through Fayetteville going to the beach. Everybody from here does, and everybody gets a speeding ticket. And so sure enough, I got up and I said, I've stopped in Fayetteville many times, but usually because my daddy was getting a speeding ticket. And, of course, they had heard this. They knew this. And so there was laughter, and it just egged me on. And so I was speaking 2 and 3 times a day for a year.
My guest is Jeannie Robertson, and she has written 3 books on the subject of humor, and she encourages us all to develop our sense of humor. And people must like your sense of humor, Jeannie, because you have a website, and how many hits do you get on your website?
Well, you know, this is the interesting thing. Remember, I'm 74, and I'm not going to say that you and I were in school together, but I am 74. And when I started, my professional materials that I would hand out to get more speeches were really done on a purple mimeograph machine where I was teaching during the winter. And the audio cassette had not been invented. So I've enjoyed going through everything from the audio to this to that. You had to have a fax machine. You had to have a fax drawing, on and on and on. But in my 60s, I embraced the Internet. And when I did, that's what opened up theater shows for me and ticketed performances, which is what I'm do an awful lot of right now. Do them in California and north, all around. And so I travel the entire country. But the embracing of the Internet was the difference. And then that, I didn't do everything. I didn't have time. I was traveling 25 days of the month. And so I just didn't have time to learn and do everything. We laughingly said, all right, now left brain, that's my husband, here are the things that we're going to think about. And I listed everything that every speaker had told me I needed to. You got to be on Twitter. You got to be on this. You got to be on that. And I said, he said, well, why don't we every night just talk about one of these things and see if they'll work for you? And one night he came in from playing tennis, and I said, do you want a Twitter tonight? And he said, I'd have to take a shower. I don't think I want to at all. We didn't know what we were doing. We were absolutely just, but I wound up using the website. I had a website, but Facebook worked for me. And one reason it worked for me, long after people said, oh, you know, Facebook's out. In order to speak, you have to know who your audience is. And the people who follow me were still on Facebook. And then when I started doing theater shows, all I had to say is, or put on Facebook, tickets go on sale tomorrow for St. Petersburg, Kansas City, wherever. Facebook people who are here, here's a code word. You get a one-day jump on when they go on sale for the public. So I really saw the advantage of having Facebook. At the same time, I went viral on YouTube a couple of times with the first story was don't send a man to the grocery store, and the next one was don't bungee jump naked. And they just went. Now the little boy across the street came banging on the door. Miss Robertson, Mama says stay in the house. You're viral. Don't come out. And we just were really not into it like the younger people, but into it enough to know when I heard other speakers say, for example, I'm so glad I had a great speaking career before all this Internet stuff came along. And all I could think of was, are you nuts? This is an advantage. The people can find us. Now, in the third week of October this year, I hit 46 million hits on YouTube.
46 now, million. You've got over 46 million fans, Jeannie?
Well, I would love to think so. I have a lot of fans, and they're very, very nice and spread the word. But I have 150 or 60,000, and these are small numbers, actually, Nancy. My fans have taken the time to 46 million times hit the click and watch one of my clips. Because some people watch them over and over, and then they bring their friends in to watch them and so forth. So the beauty of it is that when I put up a new clip, which I add a new clip every, say, 6 weeks, the first place I put it up is on Facebook. And I ask them to, if you laugh, please send it to your friends. And I thank them for doing that. And that's the way you were brought up in Quitman, Georgia, and I was brought up in most, I would say, in a lot of small towns. All you always say please and thank you, and mean it. And so when I put up a new clip, then my Facebook people immediately start sending it to their friends.
My guest is Jeannie Robertson, and she is a humorist. She's in demand as a speaker, and she encourages us all to develop a lifestyle where we cultivate our sense of humor. I mentioned earlier, Jeannie, that you have some DVDs, and do people just order them off the website?
Well, they sure do. They just go to JeannieRobertson.com and order them. Now, one of the differences in speaking at conventions in the corporate world and speaking at theater events, when people go to theaters, they expect merchandise, they call it merch, to be out in the lobby. And this has always been a little awkward for me. But if I'm not the one selling and people know they can come up and talk to me because I'm in the lobby after every show, without purchasing something, I'm more comfortable with that. But when we first put the first tape out, I remember thinking, now, let's see what happens here. And all that, and the big statement that I heard all the time was, well, now they're not going to need you to come. They can just listen to you. It was actually an audio cassette, and then remember the old VHS,
mm-hmm.
Big, bulky VHS. And then, of course, I can tell you the Christmas, if I look back at my notes, that people who follow me got DVD machines and CD machines. I mean, it just switched automatically. Everybody gave their mama and daddy those for Christmas. And I found out, what I really found out is, the minute that first tape was selling so well, I just really worked on material even harder. I will tape actually my ninth, and it'll be an hour and a half in length, of just stories in March of 2018. And it'll be out early spring or early summer.
You mentioned the title of some of your humorous pieces, and you encourage the rest of us to see the humorous side of life. What tips can you give us to be able to see, just in our daily life,
You make up your mind to look for it. It is a priority with me, tablet and pencil. And I will admit to you that when I started looking just every day for humor, I was doing so for speech material. And then I've been in situations where people were upset in airports, angry because the flights were grounded and were going to be for hours and so forth. And I was so busy looking for humor, I realized that in the gate area that my body language didn't say anger and everybody else's did. I would move toward groups of families and try to eavesdrop on what, because if you see them talking, just go see what they're saying. And what I really realized is two things. I was getting more speech material than I could ever use. Number two, I was influencing my own sense of humor. And it's, as I've mentioned many times, to say to students when they come home, did you see something funny today? And start putting a priority on that. You can make an impact on them that funny's okay. I think there are a lot of classrooms when a young person tries to express themselves with humor, they get a stern look, cut that out look. And then you have teachers who say, that is hilarious. That is hilarious. Tell me something funny again next week. And then they start realizing maybe the funny is not from TV, but what they're living every single day.
Well, I think a lot of times when families get together at the end of the day and they say, how was your day? And you get a litany of what went wrong that day and what the irritations and the frustrations were that day.
That's right.
And I think you have such a wonderful idea to focus on what was humorous, what happened today that made you laugh.
When I graduated from Auburn, my speaking career was in full gear. At the time, I was charging $50 and $100. I mean, But you were young, and at that time, I thought I was making more money than anybody that I knew. You know, this was a wonderful every time. Then it began to go up and up. But when I was teaching, I remember
that's
that
right. We haven't mentioned, I think, that you taught school for a while after you first graduated.
I taught physical education, and I coached basketball, and I loved it, but something had to give after a few years because the speaking invitations were pouring in. But my example to you might be that some days are just worse than others anytime where you have those kind of jobs. With me, I'm traveling, and some days it's tough traveling. I mean, I think, oh, great, so I'm going to get a new story here. And then, but then we get a break. In teaching in public schools, we got a break. And then we'd go into the teacher's lounge. And we went in tired. And then when we came out, we were tired and upset. Because everybody was complaining. And then they'd say, did you know we're going to have to stay for a teacher's meeting on Monday and hear an insurance I mean, it was just, everything was wrong. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if we had set a law that said, when you come in the teacher's lounge, if somebody saw something that's funny, tell us that as long as you don't hurt or put down a child. But that's and you all laughing. Now, that's taking a break. And I always felt like if you had somebody in school that you and I played on a basketball team together, we've got stories. If you had somebody in school that was just with you on those growing up years and high school years, those years when if you made eye contact across the classroom, you almost just started laughing. Didn't have to be for anything. It just you made eye contact. And then we get older. And we absorb all the tough stuff in the days, and we don't sit back and laugh. So this is a thing your listeners can do that doesn't cost them one penny. Just have some sheets of paper, and anytime you think of something really funny with it that happened, just jot down Bob playing the saxophone homecoming, and drop it in a file folder, and then. Anytime you have put another piece of paper and put it on the top of it, and so eventually you turn them all around, shake them all up, and after about a year, you won't believe it, but your file gets huge. But don't read the file all at one time. When you need take a humor break, just pull out your file at work and pull out. We go for coffee breaks. We go for every other kind of break. Just look at the piece of paper, and it may even stimulate you to call that best friend and say, I was just sitting here thinking, do you remember that time the bus broke down? We were all trying to go to this such and such a game, and we didn't have but so many hamburgers. And then you'll both be laughing. And that's taking a humor break. It doesn't cost you a penny. You don't need to buy somebody's tape. You don't have to listen to Jeannie Robertson. Everybody has those funny instances. And did you notice I sort of worked in there quickly? If they're at somebody else's expense, they're not really funny.
Yeah, yeah. Your humor's not that kind of humor.
No. I'm not. I don't go for the jugular. I'm always afraid I'll hurt somebody. Mm-hmm. And we've all got those friends. And so I called when I was in Nashville waiting to be on the Grand Ole Opry last Friday. I called a woman down in Washington, Georgia, who was in Auburn with me. And just said, I was just thinking about you, and because I had a speech several years ago, and I stayed at her house. I didn't have any reason for calling her. And she said, oh, my gosh, are you still out there? And we had a nice conversation, and I felt refreshed when I hung up. That's the kind of stuff I can do when I'm in a hotel room waiting to go be funny or take a nap. One or the other, take a pick.
My guest is Jeannie Robertson, and she's a former Miss North Carolina who made a career of public speaking. Her fellow contestants voted her Miss Congeniality, and her humor is one that she says we can develop a sense of humor if we choose to.
Yeah. Jeannie, and notice I'm not saying that you can develop a comedic skill.
Exactly. Yeah. And
different.
And you mentioned that you do have DVDs and you're on the website, but mm-hmm. you're not, I notice your thrust is not to sell things because you just want people, if they're interested, to to take advantage of the opportunity to share your sense of humor.
Well, people come up and tell you funny stories, and you have to, I really have to study and read all the stuff that comes across the internet when people are saying, because people will say to you, this really happened in my family, and it's an old joke that's been floating around for years.
But your
maybe
humor,
the person that told them that thought it was real. You know, it's, you just have, yeah. But if I'm there selling with exchanging money, it gives the appearance that they have to buy something to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather be over there taking pictures and not worrying about it because I'm not going to retire off of merchandise money. So it works. It works out. It
well,
works out well.
You write your own material, obviously, and you take it from your own life. So that makes it even funnier that these are true stories that you tell.
They are, and I have told people that it's around them every day, and if they are not seeing something humorous every day, then it's not because it's not happening. It's because they're not looking for it. That said, I will tell you that I do agree that the person in an office working with the same two people every day after years, you've heard all the stories. You've heard this and that and the other. You might have some good funny ones that you can laugh about. It is easier for me because I am in a different situation every day.
Well, Jeannie, I want to thank you for helping us see the humor in our own lives. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
And
keep laughing.
We'll look forward to your next book.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Humorist Eric Miller is known to many readers of his columns in the Chico Enterprise Record as Etc. Guy. He also writes features on business, the environment, and sports for various magazines. Today he's going to read us his short piece on Weight Watchers. Eric Miller, welcome.
Thanks, Nancy. And I, as I sit here, I really need to go back to that Weight Watchers deal. But this story was based on me feeling kind of frumpy. I went to a Weight Watchers meeting with a friend to give him moral support. And how I got wrapped up into it. So it's dedicated to anyone trying to lose weight, especially following New Year's resolutions. Title of the story is Weight Watchers' Journey May Require Duct Tape. The adult arm weighs 8 pounds, about 5% of one's body weight. Thanks to my holiday junk food diet, I'm that much heavier. I awoke this morning and had an epiphany. I still have the same arms. The calories must have flowed further south. I know better, but I'll binge until muffin tops lap over my belt. Chips are my greatest temptation, whether they're made of chocolate or potatoes. Unlike a carnival mirror, mine doesn't lie. Human anatomy fascinates me. Every body part has a role. What puzzles me are disproportionate body parts. My right bicep is larger than my left, but my left love handle is bigger than my right. I've worked on that left love handle for months. My wife gave me a pep talk. I accept you even if you're lopsided. Here, take out the trash. I maintained a trim physique well into my 30s, but by age 39, I surpassed the recommended body mass index, or BMI. Not to be confused with the BMW, the BMI is based on weight and height, not on body fat. My buddy Steve alerted me about BMI after he joined Weight Watchers. He wanted to lose 80 pounds. You dork, I bet you're the only guy there. Ha ha ha. Steve winced. I felt bad and later apologized to my friend who only wanted to improve his health, and for moral support, I went to a meeting with him. We sauntered inside on a busy Saturday morning and stood in line. The receptionist handed me a brochure. Nope, I said, this isn't for me. Well, you can weigh in and see how it goes. By now, Steve moved ahead, and I listened to a stranger discuss her weight loss goals. A husband and his wife walked in behind me. They joked about cinching duct tape around their thighs to reduce chafing. Before long, I stepped on the scale and numbers flashed past 200 pounds. I was the same weight as an NFL running back, one who's paid a lot of dough, except I was just dough. Holy cow, what happened? That's all right, the receptionist said. She tapped my wrist. That's why you're here. I joined the group. I ate more greens and fewer carbs, drank more water and less beer, and took on a physically challenging home project, digging fence post holes. Weekly meetings became a ritual, and I soon learned how to play the weigh-in game. One trick was to wear the same clothes I wore when I started to compare net gains or losses. Psychologically, every ounce mattered, especially for measuring progress. About 6 months into it, I substituted my heavyweight cotton boxers with silk underwear that weighed next to nothing. 5 months later, I weighed 40 pounds less, had a fenced yard, and an assortment of silk underwear. The benefits were awesome. My metabolism rivaled the Energizer Bunny, and I dropped 50 cholesterol points. My doctor grinned, "Your heart thanks you." I've battled weight maintenance nearly 15 years now, but the pounds creep up on me like a stalking cat. I fall off the wagon with chocolate binges and the occasional bowl of bean dip. Work, kids, and social activities clog my schedule, and it's hard to make time for exercise. But one lesson I've learned through this journey is that I need to take time for myself. My mental and physical health depends on it. Maybe that sounds selfish, but I'd rather be older and fit than selfless and dead. Life's too short to check out early. I want to travel with my wife, goof off with the kids, and play sports until I embarrass myself. I want an active, energetic lifestyle with no holds barred. When my time is up, I want to sprint through the pearly gates rather than float in on a lazy boy. I'll keep eating chocolate, though, and will replace fence boards or dig holes to offset any gains. And as I continue reeling in the years, I'll probably still wear silk underwear at weigh-ins. I wonder, though, if there's a way to use duct tape to even out my love handles. I just don't see them going away.
You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.